Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, Chase Thomas podcast, late on a Thursday evening, right before the Atlanta Falcons go take on the New England Patriots, a team that I've only had fond memories of facing in recent years. Stats by Will is here. Young Kim Pom himself. He was also here last week, but because I'm a big dumb idiot and was editing and cleaning up computer stuff at 7:30 in the morning, I just thought I'd uploaded all three of ours from last Thursday's pod. And no, I forgot that I fell asleep the night before late doing the last one and just deleted that one to clear space and thought I had them all up. No. Did not have them all up. Fell asleep. That's it was one of the more embarrassing things I've ever done. And after 700 podcasts, you'd think you'd be past all of these, but I've never been so embarrassed. Will. I felt horrible last week.
Don't feel horrible. I mean, I said some pretty outlandish stuff that will never be made known to man. I had one of my hottest takes. It's really unfortunate these are all gone. I'm kidding, but no, it happens.
What is your?
You got to think about all the stuff I have accidentally deleted while writing Tennessee previews that I've had to rewrite.
Oh yeah, that's
I make the same mistakes.
It's not fun losing stuff that you spend a lot of time on. Is not great. What is your hottest non basketball take?
Ooh, like just about life in general.
You get a lot of flack for. You get a lot of pushback for.
I'll give you one that is not a party favorite.
Okay.
Justin Timberlake is often the worst part of Justin Timberlake's songs.
Okay.
Because I think Timbaland's production is consistently up to this last album sucked, but the every album before that, Timbaland's production consistently amazing song to song. And like the guests he has in there pretty much always kill it. But there are songs where it's just like, what the hell is this guy doing? Like, I find him... I know Sexy Back is a big hit. People love that song. I think Justin Timberlake is annoying as all get out on that song. Do not love it.
Okay.
So it's a thing where I still would say that I like and even love the first three albums he did. Because like I said, the most recent one, very bad. Mm. But those first three could have been better with a better singer. I hate to say it.
Never perused a Justin Timberlake album. Can't say that has ever been on my radar. But I will say the Taylor Swift stuff, and I like Taylor. I'm a big Taylor Swift listener, but she put me in a bind with the new album. Well, she put me in a bind because Jake Gyllenhaal's my dude. Gyllenhaal is maybe my favorite actor of all time. It's like between him and the canceled Casey Affleck and Colin Farrell. So it's a tough group there. And I mean, Prisoners I Ride For is maybe the best movie of all time. I mean, I love Nocturnal Animals, Nightcrawler. Like, he's in so many great things. And she put me in a bind, throwing my man under the bus here. And just seeing Twitter all go off about Jake Gyllenhaal was tough for me in recent days.
You got to either pick Jake or you got to pick the scarf, man. I got to say, so I did listen to the Taylor's version because I think Red is easily her best album. I like both Red and 1989 very, very much, but it's like no contest, really. Little underwhelmed by the 10-minute All Too Well version. Just overlong for me.
I haven't watched it. I refuse. 10-minute songs like the Runway stuff with Kanye where I'm just like, no, you don't get 10 minutes of my time. Not doing this. You don't get this from me, because the Sports Renaissance woman tried to get me to do it, and I was like, no, I'm not sitting there for 10 minutes for this. She's out of her mind. This is not happening. No, won't do it. Refuse.
Yeah, not the best thing she's ever done by any means, but it was nice to hear. It's interesting to hear her voice at 30 versus, or I guess, well, older than 30 now versus when she was 22 doing those songs. You can tell, like, some of the vocal notes she hits are a little different this time out, but I mean, it's like, obviously musical, but yeah, I mean, 10 minutes, it's a tall ask. I mean, even Kanye, like, he had a 10-minute song in his most recent album, and it's like 5 to 6 minutes in, I'm hitting the skip button.
Yeah, I can't do it. You just, I can't do it. But you know what's funny? It reminds me of the meme of, like, the person who complains that they don't watch any movies because they're too long, but then will sit and watch 7 episodes of one show in one sitting. That's what it feels like. It's like, if you're going to listen to an album, like, it's going to go over 10 minutes, but if they're different songs for whatever reason, it doesn't feel like you're... It's almost like the Pomodoro technique, which I utilize all day long. So when people... Folks, if you're curious about how I do all the stuff that I'm doing, the Pomodoro technique goes a long way. The 25-minute intervals where you get stuff in, you just are like, I'm doing this for 25 minutes, get up, take a break, walk around, stretch your legs, get back in there, do another 25 minutes. Works for homework, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, that's I don't know. We'll see. Is it a take that Evermore is my favorite Taylor album?
That is a hot take.
Love Evermore.
I have not heard anybody say that.
I love Evermore. If I pulled up my last FM, I would say that that's probably the most played album I have of hers.
Shout out to Last FM. Shout out to when they used to drop the charts on Sundays.
I love that Last FM.
Really pumped about it.
Last FM was like how I found all of my music over a decade ago.
It's still instrumental for me in some aspects. Like, I found some older artists that would have slipped through the cracks via Last FM. But it is funny to look back, because, like, I'll pull up my page now. I don't know what your Scrabble count is, but mine is almost like 140,000, which is like somehow sad in a way where it's like, oh, I've almost been on this site for 15 years.
Can I bring something to the forefront that I'm okay bringing to the forefront at 30 years old now?
Yes.
When I was in college, I was embarrassed about certain songs and musicians that were higher up on my charts than others. So I would leave my laptop on and play certain artists to get those play counts up. So it's distorted.
See, I used to turn off or return. I think it used to be private scrabbling. I don't remember what it's called. But I would do that for songs where I was just like, well, I want to try this out.
Okay. There you go. Last FM. So many folks are like, I have no idea what they've been talking about for the last 4.5 minutes. But other people,
sorry,
you know what?
If you're like 25 or younger, I think this probably slips past you.
Goodness, man. They didn't do the younger crowd, like no LimeWire, no any of that. They didn't have to like struggle and just really have to search for good music and figure out what the cool folks are into. Speaking of cool folks and what they're into, Tennessee Twitter has enjoyed this week, Tennessee basketball Twitter in particular, Mizzou and Vanderbilt, both brutal losses in the past few days for very different reasons. It looked like a football score with Vanderbilt this week, but yeah, what do you make of Kwanzo going down to a very, who was it now? I already forgot who they lost to.
It was UMKC.
Yes.
So here's the thing for me with Missouri, and this might require a minute. Is anybody surprised? Is anybody shocked that Konzo Martin would blow a game to like a bad in-state opponent in November or December? Because this happened like every year at Tennessee, and it happened at Cal too. I mean, it's I've tried. I mean, I think Tennessee fans have very complicated feelings on Konsu, and myself, like, I don't, you know, openly despise the guy. I think, you know, he did some good here, but I think we need to be honest about it. Missouri has been garbage since the second they reached number 10 last season. You know, they completely collapsed on the stretch, lost in the first round of the NCAA tournament after it looked for a little bit there like they might be a 3 or a 4 seed. You know, you enter the season with the 13th best SEC roster. Georgia's still worse, by the way. And I guess in some aspect, it's a little surprising they lost by 14 at home to UMKC of all schools. I mean, that's openly bad. it is funny. I thought it was really funny. I don't know if people would know who this is, but some guy named Carrington Harrison on Twitter was saying UMKC plays their home games in a rec league gym and you can reserve it for pickup games, which is incredible. Absolutely incredible. But back on the subject, that Missouri team is just a bad roster with bad vibes. And I mean, I understand like their non-conference games, you're not going to be able to get up for. Okay. Like, you know, Tennessee played Tennessee Martin. They played with their food for 15 minutes, but they stepped on the gas. Missouri seems to lack the step on the gas factor. And that is what makes me think, you know, Missouri is a program and, you know, sadly for him, Konsu is a coach. It's going nowhere fast. You know, this is year 5. And when you're in year 5 and you have 0 NCAA tournament wins, you haven't finished higher than 40th in KenPom, and you haven't gotten higher than an 8 seed in the tournament. When it's year 5 and you're asking people to sit through a full-scale rebuild, you have deep-seated problems that probably are not going to get fixed.
Mm. Are you just as low on Stackhouse at this point in what Vanderbilt did this week?
I've been trying because I can't do Photoshop. that sounds like such an old person. I can't do the Photoshop, but I want to edit the PacWatch Shannon Sharp GIF to say StackWatch because that's how I'm feeling about Vandy right now. I'm on StackWatch. The awful 37-point showing is honestly more excusable to me than losing to UMKC because for 2 reasons. So you're playing VCU, who has been very good defensively basically since Mike Rhodes got there and changed everything Bill Wade was doing. And it is going to be really hard for them to replicate going 2 for 25 from 3 again. Like, that's just a, you know, once every 2 or 3 years you have a shooting night that bad and you're like, okay, that's not going to happen again. It is what it is. But
that's me at the West Hills YMCA a year ago when I was a night out and then back at the Y. I went 2 for 25, something like that, going from 3. Yeah.
But, I mean, can you blame Vandy fans for constantly wondering what's next? Because I think every time, so at least really since Stallings left, every time this program seems to have a hint of positivity going its way, whether it's, you know, that year where they got hot late and slipped into the NCAA tournament, whether it's them leading the number 1 Tennessee team late in that game, anything it's been, every time they've got a little bit going their way, something crashes and it all falls apart. And I felt really positive towards this Vandy roster entering the season. You know, I said they were 10th best in the SEC. They're out of sicko territory. They're no longer going to be, you know, the doormat doors. But
has a nice ring to it, though.
That's like a really freaking bad loss. I mean, 37, because 37 is bad in its own, but it's honestly worse to me that you would hold VCU to 48 and that VCU scored 4 points in the final 8 minutes of the game. I mean, all you would have to do is be bad offensively and you could have won. You just merely had to be bad. All you could do is not be all-time horrific, and they couldn't manage it. I don't think Scottie Pippen's only going to score 8 in a game again this year, but, you know, you look at their schedule and they've got some really intriguing tests the rest of the way in non-con play. Like, they play Winthrop at home Saturday. They play SMU in early December. And the real kicker for me is they draw Loyola at home in mid-December. I mean, they're not going to be favored at SMU, and I kind of don't think they're going to be favored at home against Loyola. And when you're in that position in year 3 under an SEC coach, I think you're in a bad spot.
Yeah, I just, the Vanderbilt thing is like, I don't think they can do better than Jerry Stackhouse anytime soon. I think he just...
And the thing is, like, if you were to ask SEC coaches, like assistants or whatever, what they think of Stackhouse, I think most of them would say they like what he does offensively, because Vandy generally has had really good shot selection under Stackhouse. They've run some interesting sets. They've done a lot of good things. They've gotten guys open. But, you know, when it's year three and you've failed to, A, make a real impact in the transfer portal in this regard, and B, find a guy other than Scottie Pippen that can really do anything for you offensively, I mean, is it going to get better?
I mean, I think it's still too early. I'm not closing the book on Vanderbilt just yet. I'm closing the book on Kwanzo and Mizzou.
I think they're going to be the 10th best in the SEC. But, I mean, when you're 10th best and your best player is heading to the NBA after this season, it's tough.
For sure. For sure. I just feel like there's still room to grow where it's like Kwanzo. I feel like they've already peaked and we're on the downward turn there in Columbia. And I'm curious, man. They have a new AD over there. They're not attached to Kwanzo. I mean, Eli Drinkwitz, pretty rocky at that point. Mizzou in some troubling waters, because guess what? I mean, they escaped the Big 12 to get away from Texas and Oklahoma. Guess who's on the way? Texas and Oklahoma. So I think it's only going to get more difficult for programs like Vanderbilt and Mizzou in the coming years. So that's also something to consider. Your guy, though, Kim English. You're a big English guy.
Mm-hmm. As a graduate of the University of Tennessee with an English degree, I am inherently a big English guy.
Mm.
But Kim specifically...
Did you minor in anything?
I'm sorry?
Did you minor in anything, or did you just go straight English?
Journalism.
You minored in journalism?
Yes.
I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah. So I can't... I don't know if you still can. At the time I graduated in 2015, it was possible. So I that could have changed, though, for sure.
This is why we do the pod, Will, because like I was going to do like English as my minor and journal. And then you know what it was? Is like I was at that point. I remember at North Georgia where I was at the point where I met my advisor, and I was like, it's kind of weird that I don't have a minor. And I didn't like the sound of not having a minor, where it felt weird. I was like, I should have something. Let's see. And do the credit stuff. And they were like, well, and I was like, I think I want to do English as a minor. I've taken a couple. And they're like, well, it's going to do this, and it's going to be this. And I was like, wait, I'm looking at another year just to add a minor? No, that's out. I'm going to go ahead and go no minor and graduate when I want to graduate. Latin was also in play. And let me tell you, use that all the time. My 4 years of Latin in high school, my two in college. That always comes in handy. But as you were saying.
Yeah, so the Kim English thing is really cool because, you know, he's very young, I think 33 years old. I don't know if there are five coaches in America that are under 40 that have a brighter future or are just currently better straight up. I mean, they were amazing in their first three games against mid-majors because I was curious to kind of follow along with that and see, you know, how quickly that turnaround could happen. Because when I did some research on them over the summer, it seemed like a quicker than expected turnaround could be possible in the sense of like, oh, they could get back to being like a top six Atlantic 10 program pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured with Maryland, you know, you're going to keep it within like 5 to 10 points probably. But to win outright on the road against a top 25 opponent, that's their first top 25 win since 2007, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Very much ahead of schedule. Very much so. I remain interested to see a couple of things with them. One is, can their three-point shooting hold up for four more months? Because right now, if I recall correctly, they're hitting 43% of their threes, and they hit half of them against Maryland. And, you know, when you watch the game, it makes some sense. Like, they get really good looks out of essentially an Alabama light offense. But 43% for a whole season is really hard to keep up. And along with that, how tight can they stay defensively? Because Maryland really did not get off many good looks last night, whether it was from three. I know they took 28, but I only counted about six or seven that were truly open. And they barely got anything at the rim after the first half. If they're able to keep those two things up in some regard, even if with a little bit of regression, that's a tournament team, man. I mean, if they're keeping this up, that's a top 50 team in America. And that's crazy to consider, given where George Mason has been at basically since Larrañaga left. I mean, if they hold up, that's a tournament team, and that's probably a multiple bid Atlantic 10 between them, St. Bonnie's, and possibly Richmond.
Oh, wow. Yeah. We'll see. We shall see. 2 weeks in, what are your strongest takeaways from the first 2 weeks of the college basketball season?
I'm just going to give a stock up and stock down report.
Okay, here you go.
That's a good one to go with. So stock up, obviously George Mason. We just talked about them. I don't think anybody's stock has risen more than George Mason's. BYU would be my number two. They demolished Oregon, and I will have to pat myself on the back for saying preseason I was lower in Oregon than seemingly everybody else because I thought they were more top 30 than top 15. But even if that's the case, even if I do end up right there, demolishing a top 30 team by 32 points is amazing. That's a huge, huge boon for them. And, you know, I kind of wonder, I know they had a bad first round loss last year to UCLA, but one, don't remember, or, you know, don't know if you remember or not, but UCLA made the Final Four. And two, BYU returned quite a bit of talent from a team that was a six seed. Mark Pope clearly gets it, clearly very good at what he does. They're going to be in their standard like 5 to 7 seed range come March, if I had to guess, which is, I mean, for BYU, that's very good. Two others, Arizona and Florida. I think Arizona is going to require some explanation because I know they've played no one so far. And I know that North Dakota State's not even a Summit League fave, but they have absolutely demolished their three opponents so far. And I know early season sample sizes are strange. You know, when you play bad teams and you beat them by a lot, how much do you really get from it? No one really knows. But to me, when you're beating teams by 50, regardless of quality, that's a good sign. Everything I've seen from them so far is really positive. They play Gonzaga fast offensively. They're moving the ball as well as anyone right now. I can't wait to see them play Wichita, I believe, tomorrow, Friday the 19th. That's a team I'm really interested in. And as a Tennessee supporter, not really looking forward to them coming to town in December.
Yeah. Well, let's get through Villanova first.
Yeah, we'll get through Villanova first. So, but the last of these, Florida, this sickens me, of course. But, I mean, I watched the Florida State game, and there are two huge things that I noticed. One is that this is the most fun a Mike White team has looked in quite a while. Two, their shot selection has taken a complete 180. Last year, I believe they got 32% of their shots from mid-range. And through three games, or as we do this podcast, they're in the middle of a fourth right now, I think. But through those games, they had only taken, I believe, 6% of their shots from the mid-range. They have gone full oats, like full ball and oats with their offense. It's five out motion now.
I hate this. I hate that he's just taken over all the puns and everything. Alabama did not need all of this. I don't like it.
No. But Florida looks legit, and I think my offseason concern with them was, you know, okay, they're going to be good defensively, but can Mike White ever figure out the offensive side of things there? And early returns look positive. I don't know if early returns look positive means you're like an SEC title contender or it's merely like, okay, Florida's top 25. But I think they're better than expected. Three teams I am down on. I don't think any of these are really going to come as surprises. Maryland, who we discussed earlier. I mean, Maryland, I mean, the loss to George Mason is one thing, but when you're trailing George Washington and Vermont at halftime and struggling with those two teams for 35 minutes apiece, something's not right there.
To be fair, it's hard to mount a comeback against the Vermont Catamounts.
That's true.
People forget.
Something doesn't appear to be right there. And, you know, I think there are... they're a reasonable preseason top 25 pick, but it has not come together yet. Maybe it will later in the year, but right now something doesn't look right. Virginia just looks lost up and down. I mean, it would be one thing if, as in preseason, we were thinking, okay, Virginia sucks offensively again, but the defense is on point. The defense is not on point. I wonder if Tony Bennett regrets not really probing the transfer portal. Because they did not make the moves a lot of other ACC schools made. And I know that coaches want four-year guys, of course. But if you're exclusively reliant on four-year guys and program building, you kind of have to accept that a year or two of that is going to suck. And this kind of looks like that year for Virginia. I mean, the Navy loss to me is one thing. It's like, okay, they didn't shoot super well. You know, you can sort of somewhat excuse that a little bit.
And it's just a good example of supporting the troops.
Yeah, they were. It was Veterans Week.
Mm-hmm.
But to get blown off the court like they did against Houston, and honestly, the 20-point deficit could have been 30. That's a really bad sign. And then Louisville. I think Louisville is a real disappointment. I thought that if...
Didn't have the best offseason.
Yeah, they're a little rocky in the offseason. But roster-wise, I thought that if things worked out all right, they could be one of the 25 or so best teams. Right now, I would not say they're even one of the 50 best. You know, the loss at home to Furman in overtime, that is one bad thing. But they started the season by struggling for almost 40 minutes with Southern. And Southern is in the 300s at KenPom. I mean, it really hasn't gotten better since. I personally cannot believe Chris Mack's tenure has unfolded in this manner, to be honest. I thought that was a grand slam hire for them, and it has not been that way.
Same thing for football. Satterfield, everyone was just super high on him coming out of App State, and it's just not gone the way folks had expected. But I think it's still time for Louisville to figure some stuff out. I think of that group, I think I'm least worried about Louisville. I think they can they can bounce back a little bit. Early Tennessee thoughts. So we talked about it a little bit at nauseam, but going into the Villanova game on Saturday, it's going to be a lot of threes, a lot of shooting on Saturday. And I'm just glad that this game was not going to come at the same time as Tennessee, South Alabama, because I did not realize they had moved that to a seven o'clock kick, which is preposterous. A night game in Neyland for South Alabama. What a move. On ESPNU, but I'm glad that this will be uninterrupted during the day on Saturday, so I can just enjoy Villanova UT.
I'm going to copy the Jose Mourinho bit, Ricey, if I speak on TV times and how blatantly money-based it all is, Twitter will suspend me. So I will withhold. Other than saying it is insanely stupid to have a night game in November where it looks like the high is going to be like 49 or something.
So yeah, it's already, too cold. I'm not going to this. There's no way I'm going to this game.
No, that's at best a watch at home. But
at best, anyway, yeah. First half at watch at home situation.
Yeah. Back to Tennessee hoops. They look like one of the 15 best teams in America. I can't really say that them being 17th in the AP is underrated necessarily, simply because they haven't played a good team. But that's going to take care of itself this weekend. I think this is sort of, you know, you don't want to make big grand statements four games into the season, but this is kind of a good way to figure out where you're at. When you're going away from home, when you're going to a casino in the middle of Connecticut for reasons best known to somebody, to play in what is somehow the best early season tournament that exists this year in college basketball, you're going to learn a lot. I find the Villanova matchup really interesting, more than I did a month ago. Originally, when this game was announced, I thought Villanova's offense was going to be really, really hard for Tennessee to keep up with. And that may still be the case because Villanova looks fantastic offensively. But having watched all three Villanova games, their complete lack of resistance with regards to interior defense right now is very not good. It's one thing when UCLA is having an easy time inside the perimeter against you for the most part. It's another when, like, Howard University is getting buckets at the rim with ease. Howard was forcing Villanova's guards to overcommit to drives for basically 30 uninterrupted minutes, and they were having a lot of trouble defending that. If they're having trouble defending that, Kennedy Chandler is going to be a real shock to the system. I mean, there's no rim protector on the Villanova roster. They have two blocks, two, as a team through three games. Two blocks, and both were in the first game, meaning they got none against UCLA and they got none against Howard. But Villanova's offense is so freaking good. So I'm really excited for this game because I think it's the best of the weekend and of this week. And I think it's a real telling sign, depending on what happens for both teams, because Villanova is going to have to figure out between now and March, what do you do when you can't protect the rim? How well can you force opponents to still shoot over the top of you? And then for Tennessee, how well do you hold up when you're going to play a top five team and you're saying, hey, true freshman Kennedy Chandler, we're going to run our offense through you? We're going to learn a lot this weekend. And I think that game is a total toss-up, to be honest. But, you know, for the Tennessee-specific view here, they should leave this weekend with one win, if not two. I think either you beat Villanova and likely draw Purdue, who is honestly better than Villanova, or if you lose to Villanova, which I think is – that's a rational guess, you likely draw UNC, who has looked – I would politely say abject defensively so far. It was not a good sign to me when UNC was going to Charleston and just getting roasted, like – possessions upon possessions at a time. When you're giving up 87 to Brown and 83 to Charleston, not good.
No, it's not good. It's not good. How do you think it goes on Saturday with Villanova, Tennessee?
This is tough. I mean, I would honestly call it a pure coin flip. I mean, if you go to KenPom right now, Villanova is seen as better than Tennessee by literally 0.04 points. It is as close as a game possibly can be at this level. So I would not be surprised by anything. The two predictions I feel pretty comfortable in making are that these two teams are going to combine for 50 or more threes, or three-point attempts, not made threes. And I think wire to wire, it's going to be within single digits both ways. I would be pretty surprised if either team builds a big lead. This seems like one where it's going to be tense and nerve-wracking and really has you pour in sweat from start to finish.
Mm. But that's going to be fun. I'm excited for it. I'm excited for it because as fun as it is to blow up bad teams, I'm excited to actually see Tennessee play somebody good. So your other team, because you are not a Benedict Arnold, but you're a two-team guy. You are a two-team guy, Will.
I support my family's rooting interests.
I don't call you Wolverine Will for nothing. And it's not because of the beard. It's not because of the fingernail length. It's because of your propensity to rock some maize. So Juwan Howard gets an extension in Ann Arbor. What do you make of it? Was this always inevitable? Was it in response to the reported extension for Mel Tucker? People are saying. What do you make of the extension there? You happy with it? You good with Howard?
Oh, love Howard. I think it's an inevitable thing to do because, I mean, like it or not, eventually NBA teams are going to come calling for Juwan. And there is a certain point where it's, you know, obviously you lost Beeline to the NBA a couple years ago, but I think the situation is
going?
Quite a bit different where, you know, Howard is younger. Howard is going to be a hotter target. I mean, think of it this way. When Spoelstra retires or leaves the Heat eventually, wouldn't you think Juwan is probably going to be pretty high on that list for the first call?
I don't think Spoelstra is leaving anytime soon.
I mean, probably not, but you know, somebody is going to call him at some point. And to get out ahead of this is good, even though through no control of Juwan or the university zone, they announced it at the worst possible time, right before a home loss to Seton Hall. But yeah, it's a good extension. I mean, that would be quite funny if they were just like, you know, Mel Tucker has stolen the headlines. He gets his headlines for 90 minutes and it's Juwan's turn. That would be so perfectly petty for U of M that I really would not doubt it if it were true.
Mm. Loyola Chicago moves to the Atlantic 10. What do you make of this move for them?
It's good and bad.
Okay.
For me personally, I don't know if you feel the same way, but I feel like some people do. I've always loved the MVC tournament because that MVC tournament, it being like the first big conference championship game every year, that first Sunday, always feels so good because you turn it on, it's like noon tip, CBS. You get to see two teams that you've seen a combined like 90 minutes of during the season. The fans are crazy into it. It's always a close game. Love Arch Madness so much. And to see that seemingly withering away is a huge bummer. But with the bad comes the good. The Atlantic 10 is already one of the best mid-major conferences. And by adding Loyola, especially with Drew Valentine on board, and I think in the same way we talked about Kim English earlier, I view Drew Valentine similarly. I think he is a really bright young coach that his star is going to rise real fast. And I mean, if it works out the way that many think it will, it's going to be hard for them to keep him more than 3 years. Kind of the same for Kim at George Mason. But Loyola seems set up quite well, don't they? You get to go to a conference where you're facing more consistent, stiffer competition because, you know, in the MVC, the bottom half of that conference has just not been good the last few years. You know, after Creighton and Wichita both departed, that conference kind of took a hit from a depth perspective. The A-10 is deeper. It's better. The top end where, you know, the Bonnies are really good this year, but, you know, you're consistently getting like Dayton, Richmond, St. Louis. Now George Mason is back. All of those teams up at the top, that's going to be, you know, much more difficult competition for them each year. And I think this is going to be a net positive move for them. I'm sure it's a positive move for them from a money perspective.
Hmm. Well, I don't think this is going to be the last team that does this.
I need them. So here's a pro tip for conferences.
Okay.
The Big Ten, completely understandable because the logo looks cool. Even though I really miss when it used to secretly say 11 in the Big Ten logo.
Uh-huh.
SEC, perfectly fine because there's no number in the conference. Big Ten, Big 12, okay, fix it. But the Atlantic 10 having 15 friggin' teams and staying the Atlantic 10 is a real problem. This, at some point, I understand you can't change your conference name every 2 years. It's not a video game. But you have got to either just be like, okay, we're the Atlantic Conference, or...
You already have the Atlantic Coast, though.
You've got to change this up. Atlantic 10 is not going to cut it anymore. you can't say Atlantic 10 plus 5.
It doesn't really roll off the tongue. The Atlantic 10 plus 5. No, I agree. I guess I'm just numb to it now of all the conferences.
Yeah, I mean, conference realignment has had so many moves and shifts, like even since, you know, Nebraska and Colorado kicked it off all those years ago, that at this point when I see these announcements, it's just like, all right, well, that's this week's. We'll see who moves conferences next week.
Mm. Well, there you go. There you go. We can wrap up. Did you read Borzello's piece on early takeaways from him?
Had it pulled up this morning. There's a couple in there that are quite interesting because, you know, Travion Williams at Purdue coming off the bench to start the season, I think was unforeseen. But it makes them scarier, I would say. So, like, somehow. So now, if people haven't followed Purdue, Zach Edey has been starting at center. And Zach Edey is 7'4", sort of like a better Matt Harms. So what you're, so think of it this way. You're a team, your center's like 6'10 or whatever. You're starting off defending Zach Edey. 4 minutes into the game, Travion Williams, who is like 6'10", 280, and built like a bulldozer, comes off the bench. What do you do when you have to defend two guys that tall, that extremely talented, and that remarkably different with such unique skill sets? What are you supposed to do?
I don't know.
I mean, it's going to be really tough. I think, you know, before the season, I would have said Michigan was by a hair the Big Ten favorite. But I think it's Purdue. I mean, when I see the matchup problems they're presenting teams, and I think they're going to win this little multi-team event in Connecticut this weekend with UNC, Villanova, and Tennessee. That feels like a team that's going to be a one seed come March. They're just loaded with talent. I don't know. Other than that, for the Borzello observations, I think there's some more intriguing ones, but we covered that North Carolina might have a really bad defense. I think another one that has already been proven wrong in my eyes is the Atlantic 10 being a one bid league. George Mason just pulled off, if not the very biggest win of the non-conference season so far, because I think that goes to Seton Hall, at minimum the second biggest win anybody's had yet. That's huge, 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 huge for that conference, because that's going to, not only does that help George Mason, that helps every Atlantic 10 team when you beat a top 20 opponent. That raises the conference profile. That makes everybody look better. That makes everybody pay more attention. So I think that if I had to guess right now, I really do think they're going to end up getting 2+ bids.
Okay. I like it. I like it. Will, what can the good folks check out from you at statsbywill.com this week?
You can expect a Villanova Tennessee preview tomorrow, November 19th. Mm-hmm. The game is Saturday, but I hate working on Saturdays, so I put out the Saturday previews on Friday. Depending on who Tennessee plays Sunday, Purdue or UNC, you will see that preview Sunday morning. Weekly recaps after every two games. Other stuff at Stats by Will on Twitter, like graphs, charts, interesting data trends, small sample size fun. Try and have a good time with it, you know?
I mean, your stuff is just top notch. Top notch work.
And people are going to love it even more now that I figured out how to correctly format some of this stuff in Excel. I spent 10 years of my life just doing the text, mm-hmm. figured out how to do some formatting stuff today. This really does make me sound old. I figured out how to do like basic graphic formatting stuff in there literally today, this morning. And boy, is it going to change the previews.
All right, that'll
I mean, that's a good thing, though. That's a positive. It's a step in the right direction. I like it, but your previews were already great, man. So keep up the great work. Vols fans are lucky to have you covering Vols Hoops for them this year, so go check out Will's stuff if you've not already done so, and follow along this season as the Vols march towards a guaranteed national championship with the one-and-done ace, Kennedy Chandler, on Saturday against Villanova. Will, always a pleasure. I'll talk to you very soon.
Yes, thanks for having me on.
$5 a month. It helps the show keep the lights on, so that would be a great help to me as well. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chase_Thomas. You could go to ChaseThomasPodcast.com, which has all of my stuff, all my episodes ever, links to everything that you need, and all of my writing that I'm doing fairly often these days on the NFL, on NBA, on college football, on pro wrestling. I write about everything. I write a lot. So go read me on that front. So if you're not tired of listening to me, you can also read me. So that's awesome. But I think that's enough self-promotion from me for one episode. I hope you continue listening. That would be great. And I will talk to you all again very soon. Thanks, guys.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.